So, the last session of this short seminar, and actually the purpose, the objective of these seminars is to just remind you of what we are practicing, what we are supposed to aspire for, what is our goal, and the objective is to remind everyone about this spiritual goal so that we can become fixed up in our spiritual life. I mentioned on the first day that the reason behind this seminar was to remind everyone about this, the importance of practicing spiritual life seriously. We are in a world of Maya. This is the world of Krishna's illusory energy. And the illusory energy of the Lord has two aspects, two potencies, you can say. One is it covers us with ignorance, avaranatmika, and the other is bikshepatmika, it throws away from Krishna. Maya, the illusory energy, covers us with ignorance. And as a result of that, we forget Krishna. And it throws us away. She throws us away from Krishna. And she creates an atmosphere, an environment, a surrounding, which is illusory. Illusory in the sense it is she. She's a personality actually. And she makes us forget our actual objective and deludes us. You should have done it in the beginning of the class. So, it's actually, we wanted to go away from Krishna. And she provides us with the facility. She makes that makes the arrangement to go away from Krishna. And the reason behind that, or our intention to go away from Krishna, is that we wanted to enjoy like Krishna. In this material nature, we all actually become little Krishna. Or little Krishna means we want to become miniature supreme personalities of Godhead. We tend to think that we are the center of everything. This whole creation is for us to enjoy. This whole creation is for us to exploit. And we are the supreme controller. Every living entity thinks that way, starting from an ant all the way up to the demigods. Everyone is thinking that He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, it's not surprising that we see so many gods, so many Bhagavans are cropping up every day. In reality, everyone is trying to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his own way. And we think that everything is for our enjoyment, our sense gratification. And she is making all the arrangements. Yeah, that's true. You are the supreme enjoyer. Everything is meant for your enjoyment. Just try a little harder and you'll become the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if you're not satisfied with that, then practice yoga. And you will achieve yoga siddhi. And then you will become really the Supreme Personality, Bhagavan. These are actually Maya's illusory influence. And then a personality like Srila Prabhupada comes and reminds us, you are not God. You are the servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Think about it. Who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? He is the Supreme Creator. Are you the Supreme Creator? You can't even digest your own food that you eat and you are thinking that you are the Supreme Creator. Do you possess all the wealth? Do you possess all the strength? Do you possess all the beauty? Well, that maybe everyone thinks. And so forth. If you think about it seriously, then you can see that there is no way we can become God. By practicing yoga, you can't become Bhagavan. Bhagavan is Bhagavan all the time. Under all circumstances, he is Bhagavan. He doesn't have to become Bhagavan. He is Bhagavan. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, this is how a pure devotee of the Lord comes and gives us this very important message and situates us in our rightful position. You are not the controller, you are controlled. You are not the creator, you are created. You are his part and parcel. And that Supreme Personality of Godhead is your dearmost friend. He is such a well-wishing friend of yours that wherever you go, he is going with you. Being situated in your heart, he is with you all the time. He knows what you need and he is providing for that. So just depend upon him. This dependence is another name of surrender. We depend upon him. To surrender means to depend upon him. And when we depend, then automatically all kinds of wonderful things start to happen. As we surrender unto him, as I mentioned yesterday, as the seed of devotional service sprouts, fructifies, two leaves come out. Those two leaves of the creeper of devotional service are Kleshagni, Shubhada. All the suffering, all the distressful situations just disappear. Kleshagni. kleshas, the suffering condition is finished. And the life becomes full of auspiciousness. And those who receive such mercy of a pure devotee, they are indeed the fortunate souls. They are the real fortunate souls. And that is why it is so important that we recognize the value of the gift we received and practice it, utilize it in the most sincere way. So this is what we are here for, and we are just reminding each other. Yes, we are reminding each other. When I am speaking to you, I am reminding myself also. It is not that just you are here to receive it. I am also receiving it. I am also reminding myself. This reminder is very, very important. So, the most important consideration is to remember that we are very, very fortunate. We are very fortunate. No matter whoever we are, old, young, men, women, learned, not so learned, we all are fortunate to receive this wonderful gift, and we are, all of us are capable of receiving this gift. It is not that it's meant only for some individuals and not for others. It's meant for everyone. Now maybe I can tell you how I received this priceless gift. Do you want to hear? Or the way I saw Srila Prabhupada and the way I received this gift. Fortunately, I became interested in spiritual life. It happened when I was in the West. I was in Europe, I was in Germany. It all started with a bitter argument once I had with one of my American friends there. And he was kind of quite offensive about India's situation. India is a poverty-stricken country, India is this, India is that, like. And I kind of couldn't tolerate that. I just started to respond very strongly. And it became so hot that other friends had to really stop both of us. But then one thing occurred to me at that time. That yes, I am proud of being an Indian. I am proud of India's culture and heritage and glory. But I realized at that time how little I knew about India's culture, India's spiritual heritage and so forth. So I started to read. And while reading, I started to develop the interest. It's actually so fascinating. I wrote to a friend of mine in India. They actually have a book shop. very prestigious bookshop. I asked him to send some books on India's philosophy and culture, etc. And the book that he sent me was actually a book written by an Englishman. So when I saw that, I became quite, I won't say disappointed. I was a little skeptical. Why? I have to read an Englishman's writing to understand India's culture and heritage. It was a book called A Search in Secret India. A Search in Sacred India, actually. A Search in Sacred India by Paul Brunton. And actually that book was very fascinating. I needed to see India through the eye of an Englishman. He was a reporter, went to India with an assignment, reporting assignment, and he became involved in spiritual culture of India. And that actually gave me an insight of India's spiritual heritage, and then I started to read. And incidentally, many of the books I read was Vivekananda's books. And also Radhakrishnan's. Actually, the Bhagavad Gita I got was Radhakrishnan's Bhagavad Gita at that time. Anyway, later on I kind of became quite antagonistic to those Radhakrishnan's philosophy. I mean, coming in contact with Srila Prabhupada, of course. And Vivekananda's is not at all spiritual what he was giving. Anyway, so that generated the interest in me. And I decided, okay, I have to go back to India in search of a guru. And I went to India, and that was another disappointment. I was searching for a guru. I went straight from Delhi airport to Haridwar and Rishikesh and beyond. And so, but you know, like all these so-called spiritual sadhus that I met, I was not at all impressed, to say the least. And then I practically gave up my search. I thought inwardly, I've been searching for my guru, but I can't find him. If at all I have a guru, then let him come and pick me up. I can't find him. If I really have a guru, then let him come and pick me up. Thinking that I gave up my search, and then one day a friend of mine who already joined ISKCON in Germany, he just knocked at my door one evening, and he was completely transformed, shaved head, dhoti, kurta. Even in my remotest dream, I couldn't imagine him wearing a dhoti and kurta. I mean, he was completely different, and he was completely transformed. And so it is through him I went to Calcutta Temple, and then I wanted to get a book. I wanted to get a Bhagavad Gita, actually. But they didn't have a Bhagavad Gita. I said, give me any book that you have. So the one that was in size and thing, quite similar to Bhagavad Gita, was the nectar of devotion. So I said, okay, I'll take that. And I went home, and as I started reading, it just struck me with a wonderful awareness, wonderful realization, that this is what I was looking for. Initially, previously, I didn't really know what I was looking for. I didn't know what I was searching for. I was searching for a guru. I didn't know what to expect from a guru. I didn't know what spiritual life actually was. I thought that guru will take me to the Himalayas and show me how to become God. But this book, the first thing that occurred to me, I was actually, when you practice, I mean, kind of become interested in spiritual life, what actually aspire for is liberation. You think of liberation. So, when I started to read The Nectar of Devotion, at the very outset, I actually became aware that there are five kinds of liberations that really impressed me very much. Oh, five kinds of liberation. And then I became aware that out of these five kinds of liberation, four are positive and one is negative. This one negative liberation is the one that is given to the demons. And then I realized that is the kind of liberation I was aspiring for. And obviously I didn't want to become a demon or identified as a demon. So that is one thing that came with a wonderful awareness. There are five kinds of liberation. So specific, so precise. Four kinds of liberations are being in the same planet with the Lord. Being near the Lord. Having the same form as the Lord. And having the same opulence as the Lord. And then I became aware. It all happened in a very short time, actually, just in a few pages. That Krishna, that God is a person. God is a person. As opposed to that, my idea was that God is some light and energy or something. And the form that is just a imaginary. All the forms that God has is imaginary. But God is a person, not a light or energy. And He is Krishna. This came with such a reassuring and profound realization. Krishna, whom I really loved from my, he was my hero from my childhood. And this Krishna is God. Prior to that, nobody actually reminded me that Krishna is God. Or even if we thought that Krishna is God, we thought that Krishna is God like so many other gods. Like Ramakrishna is God, Sai Baba is God, and this kind of God, Krishna is another God. But to get the understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that was it. And the book was so fascinating that I couldn't stop reading. Couldn't stop reading till I fell asleep. In the morning when I woke up, the first thing I did is pick up the book and start reading. And I was totally absorbed in this book. It was so fascinating. And the next night, I had a dream. I dreamt of Srila Prabhupada. I saw that Srila Prabhupada was sitting on a throne. Those days I didn't know what a Vyasasan was, because the sadhus in India don't sit on elaborate seats. At the most they sit on a tiger skin. So here Prabhupada was sitting on a throne like a king, and there was a brilliant light around him, as if the light was coming out of his body. And just the sight, although it was a dream, but I felt as if I was completely conscious, I was completely aware, I completely knew what was going on. I was right in the middle of it. And so I offered my obeisances. I recognized, finally I found my guru. Here is my guru. Then I inquired from Calcutta temple where Prabhupada was, and I was told that Prabhupada was in America at that time and he would come back after a few months. So I thought, okay, yeah. So until Srila Prabhupada came back, I would go visit different places of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes and Krishna's pastimes, thinking that the first place I went to was Mayapur. I arrived there in the evening. Evening arati was going on. Those days Mayapur had about 100 devotees, maybe 150 devotees, and most of them are foreigners, most of them are Americans and Europeans. And that evening kirtan was, arati was so vibrant, devotees were chanting and dancing. And that sight was so enlivening. And so after the arati, I spoke to some devotees, and they all were very friendly, so they made arrangements for me to stay. And everyone started to tell me, why don't you join? Why don't you stay with us? And then after that, soon after the arati, I was invited to the Bhagavad Gita class. And it was a Western devotee giving the class. It was Bhakti Raghav Maharaj. He was a brahmachari at that time, Raghav Pandit Prabhu. And and it was so impressive, like he was quoting Sanskrit verses and explaining things in such a beautiful way, and explaining how futile it is to get involved in materialistic way of life. The real life is spiritual life. And it sounded like he was speaking to me. And so then so that night I slept. Next morning I went to Mangal Arati, and then I also, after the deity greetings, there was a Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam class. And Bhagavatam class was given by a sannyasi, and he was even more impressive. He was quoting so many verses and explaining Srimad Bhagavatam, and I literally felt that, oh, these devotees know so much and I am totally ignorant. And then right after the class, this sannyasi, he came to me, straight he walked up to me, and he also started to tell Why don't you stay here? See how you, whether you like it or not. And so he started to preach to me. I was already very impressed with him, listening to his Bhagavatam class. And he was a young American sannyasi, very handsome. So he's very impressive. And I started to think, everyone is asking me to join. And I also decided that I would surrender unto Srila Prabhupada. So why don't I just join? Like, let me, see how it is. Instead of just, because I had been wandering around for a long time, and I thought that, okay, let's see, settle here and see. I stayed in many ashrams also before, so I thought I'll give it a try. So I went to a barber, got my head shaved. I went to Ganga, took a bath, threw away my old clothes, and put on dhoti and kurta. And when I came back to the temple, everyone was shocked. Everyone was asking, why don't you join, why don't you join? And when I shaved up and joined, they were surprised. So this is how my spiritual life actually began. I was very fortunate to be involved in Mayapur. And right from the beginning I got involved in quite a few different activities. Because those days, as I said, most of the devotees were Westerners. There were hardly any educated Indians there. So I was given a lot of responsibilities. And so I got involved in many activities there. And Jayapataka Maharaj and Bhavananda Maharaj were the co-GBCs of Mayapur at that time. And both of them were very kind to me. Once I had when I left home and came to Mayapur, I didn't tell anyone where I was going. Like, everybody knew that I'm going out, so didn't mind. And so after I came to Mayapur, then I wrote to my father that I came to Mayapur and I would spend some time here. So my father, I received a letter from my father. There was a few things that he wanted me to take care of. And so one day at that time Jayapataka Maharaj was not there in Mayapur. Jayapataka Maharaj, most of the time he used to travel and preach. There was a van that was brought from Germany, and with a group of devotees he was traveling and preaching, distributing Prabhupada's books in Bengal. And so I practically left without telling anybody. And everybody thought that I left. And when Jayapataka Maharaj came back, he came back the next day or the day after that. And when he got to know that I left, he was very upset. And when I joined in Mayapur, I had to fill up a form. And in the form there was my address. So Jayapataka Maharaj came to Calcutta to rescue me. But that day, incidentally, I was out to visit some of my friends. And practically the whole day I was out. Like, I going back and I was to meet my friends and speak to them and try to persuade them to follow this path. You know, I thought that all my friends would join. But unfortunately not a single one joined. So then in the evening, when I went back at home, not evening, it was quite late actually, around 9 o'clock or so, So my father told me that Jayaprakash Swami came quite a few times and in search of me. So when I heard that, I felt very guilty, and the next morning I went to Mangal Aratik. Like Calcutta temple was not too far from my house, and so just went there in the morning. And actually when I went there, Calcutta temple was closed. So just before Mangal Aratik, they opened the door, and after Mangal Aratik I met with Jayaprakash Maharaj, and he told me that, and I told him that no, I never left, I was just going to go back. And I told him that, you know, like the few days that I was in Calcutta, I was chanting 32 rounds every day. Some days I even chanted 64 rounds. And so he said, come, let's go back to Mayapur. So I didn't even go home right from the temple. I just went to Mayapur. And so this is how it actually, my spiritual life started there. And I was waiting for Prabhupada to return. So when I got the news that Prabhupada has come back to Bombay, I told Bhavananda Maharaj that I wanted to go to Bombay. And he told me, look, in Bombay nobody knows you. Besides that, Prabhupada is quite sick. So there's no way you will be able to go near him. At that time I couldn't actually imagine how rare it was to go near Srila Prabhupada. And he told me, wait till Prabhupada came back to Mayapur and you will get to see him. So I accepted it. Then we got a news that Prabhupada came to Kumbh Mela in Allahabad. So in a bus, about 50 devotees traveled to Allahabad, and I also was included in the team. So we went to Allahabad, Kumbh Mela. As soon as I arrived, just after leaving my things in the tent, I went straight to see Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada's tent was surrounded by a corrugated tin wall, and somebody was, one Western devotee was guarding the gate. And so when I tried to enter, so he stopped me. He said, no, don't go, can't go now. Come in the evening, Prabhupada will give darshan. So I just accepted it. And when I was walking back, then I saw Bhavananda Maharaj was carrying a basket of vegetables that he brought from Mayapur to give to Srila Prabhupada. And so he's seeing me, he said, come, I'm going to see Srila Prabhupada. And so I just also followed him. So this guard devotee respectfully made way for him, and I followed him. And when I came in front of Prabhupada's tent, Bhavananda Maharaj just went straight in, and I saw Srila Prabhupada sitting behind a desk. And so just seeing him, I offered obeisances. And then after offering obeisances, when I was about to enter into the tent, Rameshwar Maharaj was Prabhupada's secretary at that time. He stopped me. He said, Prabhupada is taking prasad, don't go there now. And I felt so bad. I started to think, why did I offer obeisances? I could have offered obeisances inside. If I went with Bhavananda, no one would have stopped me. But then I realized one thing, that it is not easy to go near Srila Prabhupada. I realized Prabhupada has so many followers, so many disciples, and it's practically impossible for Prabhupada to see everyone. and at least to see someone insignificant as I am. And so I got involved in book distribution. Sridhar Maharaj was organizing book distribution, and so I just started to distribute books, and it was very exciting. In Kumbh Mela, people are very receptive, and like, you know, they were very willingly taking the books. And so I got so absorbed in book distribution that I forgot that Prabhupada was giving darshan in the evening. So when I came back, I saw that already darshan has started. The tent was packed with people, and somehow I squeezed in into the tent. I was practically standing, touching the wall at my back. And it was such a wonderful sight to see Srila Prabhupada. I just kept on standing there, just seeing Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada was answering the questions people were asking. And it was such a wonderful sight. In a way, I got the impression at that time, like, Prabhupada was like Bhishma Dev. People were throwing arrows at Prabhupada, and Prabhupada very easily deflecting those arrows. They're shooting the arrows of questions, and Prabhupada was deflecting. And some of the questions were so brilliantly answered. One thing I remember very vividly, somebody was kind of in a challenging way. He was asking Srila Prabhupada that anyway, listen. No, not that. So he was asking why you are building new temples when there are so many old temples needing renovation. Because in India there are many old temples and they are in a really bad condition. So in a challenging way he asked Srila Prabhupada that why are you building. At that time Prabhupada actually inaugurated in 74, Vrindavan temple was inaugurated, and that was a big sensation there. And why are you building new temples when there are so many old temples needing renovation? So Prabhupada didn't answer the question directly. Prabhupada asked, who is that lady sitting next to you? So he said, she's my wife. Prabhupada asked, why did you get married? So the man couldn't quite answer. So Prabhupada said, putrarthe kriyate bharja. One gets married in order to have children. But why have children when there are so many children loitering in the streets? When there are so many orphan children loitering in the street. So then Prabhupada explained that just as you want to have your own children, devotees want to build the temples for Krishna. Their temple for Krishna. So in this way Prabhupada was answering these questions so nicely. Because in India sometimes people were quite challenging. They think that they know better than anyone else. So anyway, that is how I practically saw Srila Prabhupada for the first time. then we are happily participating in Kumbh Mela, sometimes going to the Ganga, taking a bath and distributing books and having wonderful kirtan, and Prabhupada was giving classes in the morning and giving darshan in the evening. And then one morning we got to know that Srila Prabhupada was going to leave Kumbh Mela. All of a sudden Prabhupada decided to leave. And I just accepted, well, Prabhupada, whatever he wants, he can do. Like he wanted to leave. And then after breakfast, Bhavananda Maharaj came to me and told me, Prabhupada is leaving tonight for Calcutta. I told him that I heard that Prabhupada was leaving. And then he said, a small group will be traveling with Srila Prabhupada. A carriage will be hooked onto a Calcutta bound train, and Prabhupada will be traveling with a small group of devotees, and you have been included in that group. I literally started to jump with joy. And what a good fortune, like I'll be traveling with Srila Prabhupada. The train started at night, and in the morning I was chanting. And then Bhavananda came to me and said, come, I'll take you to Srila Prabhupada. All these days, all these months, I was dying to meet Srila Prabhupada. Now when he came and told me, come, I'll take you to Srila Prabhupada, something happened to me and I felt that I was not qualified to go near Srila Prabhupada. Bhavananda probably understood my feelings, so he caught me by my hand, dragged me through the corridor and opened Srila Prabhupada's compartment door and pushed me in. I fell flat, offering obeisances. When I got up, saw that Prabhupada was looking at me, and then Prabhupada motioned, asking me to sit next to him. The first class compartments in India and trains is the two seats facing each other. In one seat there was Bhavananda Maharaj, Rameshwar Maharaj and Jayaprataka Maharaj, and in this one Prabhupada was sitting, and Abhiram Prabhu, who was the temple president of Calcutta at that time, he was sitting on the floor. So I told Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I would rather sit on the floor. Prabhupada said, no, sit here. So I just rolled up the blanket that was spread over the seat and sat on one corner. And Prabhupada asked me, after some initial exchanges, Prabhupada told me, you translate my books into Bengali. And that actually created the real good fortune for me. That assignment gave me the liberty to go to Srila Prabhupada anytime I wanted to. And of course, I mean, from then onwards, nobody ever questioned when I wanted to go to Srila Prabhupada. And so I started to translate. Prabhupada came to Calcutta, and one evening Prabhupada was giving darshan to many important people who came to see him in Calcutta. And so then the evening arati started, and Prabhupada told everyone to go to the arati. So everyone left. I also went. I was standing in the arati, and I was thinking that in arati I can attend any day, but to be able to be near Prabhupada is not going to be possible all the, any other time. So thinking that, I left the Arithik and went to Srila Prabhupada's room. So as I opened the door, I found Prabhupada was counting money. The donations that came, Dakshina that came to Prabhupada, those people gave, Prabhupada was counting that money. It kind of gave me a shock, because in India, people, sadhus generally don't touch money or count money. But I brushed that thought aside. Prabhupada is perfect, whatever he does is perfect. So Prabhupada looked up at me and told me, asked me, "So what do you want?" I said, "Prabhupada, I just wanted to be near you." "Okay, come sit down." So I sat down, Prabhupada kept on counting. And then he gave the money and the drawer. And then he asked me, "So what do you want?" So I told Prabhupada, "Srila Prabhupada, will you please give me initiation?" Because I had some doubt whether Prabhupada would give me initiation, because I heard that there are many devotees who are waiting for a long, long time and Prabhupada didn't give them initiation. And I was thinking, if that also happened to me. And then, so with a hesitatingly, I asked Srila Prabhupada whether he would give me initiation. Prabhupada said, "Yes, I'll give you initiation during Gaur Purnima in Mayapur. I'll give you initiation." And then right from Calcutta, Srila Prabhupada went to Bhubaneswar. Gaur Govinda Maharaj secured a piece of land, and Prabhupada went there to install the Shila, the Nag, Anantashesh there, on which the temple would come up. I could have gone to also Bhubaneswar with Srila Prabhupada, but I decided not to, because I was printing a book. I collected some of Prabhupada's old writings from 48 to 52 that came out in a magazine, monthly magazine of Gauriya Math. And so I collected those articles, and I was printing a small 64 pages book. So I thought that I would give it to Srila Prabhupada when he came back. And then Prabhupada came to Mayapur. I was there, and it was a wonderful sight to see how wonderfully Srila Prabhupada was received by the devotees. And I could also see the love that devotees had for Srila Prabhupada. Like, they were just there on a row in Mayapur as Prabhupada came in. As Prabhupada started to walk, just by seeing Prabhupada, I saw devotees, some devotees, tears just started to flow from their eyes, as if unconsciously they started to shed tears. Everyone offered obeisances. I also offered obeisances. The big kirtan, we followed Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada had the darshan of Radha Madhav. Those days it was small Radha Madhav and Mahaprabhu. And then Prabhupada was in Mayapur, and I used to translate and take them to Srila Prabhupada for correction. And then one day Srila Prabhupada gave me a stack of Bengali letters, and he asked me to reply them. The way to reply was, I would read out the letters, then Prabhupada would give me the points, and then I had to draft the letter, and the rough copy I would take to Srila Prabhupada and read them out. Prabhupada would correct them, and then I would handwrite those letters in Prabhupada's letterhead. And Prabhupada is to sign them. So this is how. So when I finished replying all the Bengali letters, Prabhupada gave me a stack of Hindi letters and wanted me to reply them. And so I did that. And that's one thing with Srila Prabhupada. He would reply every single letter. Not a single letter went unanswered from Srila Prabhupada. He was such a caring person. Whoever wrote, Prabhupada would reply. Then one day Srila Prabhupada told me that he was going to appoint me as his secretary for Indian affairs. And he called Tamal Krishna Maharaj. At that time Tamal Krishna Maharaj was Prabhupada's secretary. And he told me that he appointed me as his secretary for Indian affairs. And he wanted me to move into Tamal Krishna Maharaj's room. Prabhupada's secretary's room was just two rooms away. Actually, Prabhupada's secretary's room used to be just next to his room in Mayapur. But those days, the letters had to be typed with a tick-tick typewriter. And that used to make the sound, and that Prabhupada used to feel disturbed. So Prabhupada shifted his secretary's room further away, than next to that, so that he wouldn't listen to the sound. And that was another good fortune for me, to have such close association of Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And he was very kind to me. And we are sharing the room. And he literally took me under his wings. He was training me also. And he was very wonderful devotee. Very disciplined, very organized. Every morning he would wake up at about 3 o'clock. And then he would play the tape, Prabhupada's tape, when you'd go to the bathroom. And lying on the bed, I would listen to the tapes also playing in the bathroom. Then when he finished, then I would go take a bath. And he used to take care of Prabhupada so nicely. And together we had the good fortune of serving Srila Prabhupada. And then Prabhupada decided to go to Bombay after Mayapur festival. Yeah, during the Mayapur festival, Prabhupada gave me sannyas. Prabhupada gave me first and second initiation together. Brahmananda Maharaj was there. So he was also Prabhupada's secretary at that time. So he came and told me, "Boy, you made it. Prabhupada decided to give you first and second initiation together." And so after Mayapur festival, Prabhupada decided to go to Bombay. So I was naturally thinking that I would go also with Srila Prabhupada. But Bhavananda Maharaj told me, he just, one day he came and started to tell me, "Look, you have so much to do here. There are not many devotees like you here. No one is like you here who can take care of all these things, and you have already so much responsibility. So you don't go with Srila Prabhupada, you stay in Mayapur." Although my heart broke, but I couldn't say anything to him, because he had done so much for me. So I just accepted it. And then just the day before Prabhupada was to leave, Prabhupada asked me, "You are not coming?" So probably I was just waiting for that opportunity. So I said, "No, Prabhupada, Bhavananda Maharaj told me that serving spiritual master in separation is higher than serving him personally." So Prabhupada said, "That may be, but when your spiritual master wants you to come with him, I think you should come with him." So I just ran to Bhavananda Maharaj and told him what Prabhupada told me. So he said, "Well, if Prabhupada wants you to go, sure, you should go with him." And then I jokingly told him, and Prabhupada asked me to tell you that you have to pay for my fare. So this is how we went to Bombay. And that was also another very interesting episode. Prabhupada went straight, the car took Prabhupada straight to his old residence, old apartment. And Prabhupada asked, "Why did you bring me here? I'll stay in my new apartment." So they said, Tamal Krishnamurti said, "Prabhupada, that apartment is not complete." Prabhupada said, "Complete or not, I'm going to stay there." And in a way we can see that Prabhupada knew probably that that's the last time he was going to come to Bombay. That's the only time he would be staying in that apartment. So he said, "Ready or not, I'm staying there." So Prabhupada was taken there. Fortunately, the lift was working, but it was not properly fixed. I mean, anyway, somehow the lift was there and took Prabhupada to his apartment in the tower, the top floor of the tower. And yeah, it was not really ready. I mean, some doors were not fixed, some toilets were not fixed, the roof, the air place looked, I mean, they were not expecting Prabhupada to come. But still Prabhupada just went and sat there. He was going to stay there. Complete or ready or not. Tamal Krishna Maharaj consulted with Giriraj Maharaj. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj was actually so expert, so intelligent, and so expert in making arranged things. So he told Giriraj Maharaj, "Look, Prabhupada can't stay here. So we have to take Prabhupada to Bombay. The program, main program, is going to be in Bombay city. So let's make some arrangement that Prabhupada will stay in Bombay during that program, and in the meantime, this, the work in Prabhupada's apartment would be ready, complete." So the first consideration was a very wealthy person in Bombay. His name is Bogilal Patel. And Prabhupada stayed in his place sometimes, but unfortunately Bogilal was not there. So he really had a palace in Bombay. And but then the arrangement was made in the house of Kartikeya Mahadevi, another wealthy life member and very, very dear follower of Srila Prabhupada. And Kartikeya Mahadevi was also, he didn't have a full house, but he had a luxurious apartment with, I think, 5 bedrooms, right in the, on the ocean, on the beachfront. Beautiful apartment. Those days it was one of the most luxurious apartments. And he vacated the whole apartment for Srila Prabhupada. And he with his family, his wife and two daughters and one son, moved into another apartment in the same building. I think one of their relatives also was there in that building. So we moved in there, and Prabhupada started to attend the programs. And every evening Prabhupada used to go there. Huge pandal was made, and thousands of people. That place is a big park right in the center of Bombay city. Most important areas of the city. And thousands of people are coming and attending the program. And Prabhupada was... That's another wonderful thing about Prabhupada. When Prabhupada used to go there, used to see Prabhupada was sitting there, kind of tired and exhausted. But when Prabhupada would start speaking, his body would become more and more straight, and as if at the end he's just sitting at the edge of his seat and shouting like a lion, preaching Krishna consciousness, distributing Krishna consciousness. One day Prabhupada noticed one Arab gentleman in the crowd. He was dressed in Arabic attire, like, you know, this ring on the head, white thing, long white gown. And Prabhupada noticed him, and Prabhupada sent Bhavananda to call him, and he was brought onto the stage. Prabhupada asked him to sit next to him. And it was such a wonderful sight. Here is a big spiritual leader addressing a Hindu spiritual leader addressing thousands of people, and next to him there is a typical Muslim gentleman. And Prabhupada was conversing with him when he was sitting. Prabhupada noticed that he had some beads in his hand. Prabhupada said, What do you do with the beads? He said, I just fiddle around. Prabhupada said, no, they are actually meant to be chanted the name of the Lord. And these are the counting beads. They're meant to be counted, how many times you are chanting. Prabhupada said, he pulled out his beads, I also have one. Then Prabhupada said that this is sacred. Therefore you should be careful that it is kept in a clean way. So Prabhupada told him that, you know, it must be kept in a bag. And this person turned out to be the chief of police of Kuwait. He came to Bombay for treatment, and that was the first day he was allowed to go out of the hospital. And he came out of the hospital and he was walking in the park. And at a distance he saw a bhikkhu gathering. So out of curiosity he just came there, and Prabhupada invited him onto the stage. So this is how Prabhupada was spending his time in Bombay. Then after the program, this program was for 7 days, but then it was extended by I think 2 or 3 days. And this time the Prabhupada's quarters were complete, and Prabhupada went there. And so in Mayapur, Kathamal Krishna Maharaj and I were staying in the same room. In Bombay I thought the room was much smaller, Prabhupada's secretary's room. So I thought that I would not let the room, Kathamal Krishna Maharaj have the room, and I would stay with Upendra Prabhu. He already joined Prabhupada as a servant, personal servant. And so I thought I would share the room with Upendra Prabhu. Kathamal Krishna Maharaj noticed that my suitcase was not there. So he asked me, what happened? Where is your suitcase? So I told him that I thought that I would share the room with Upendra Prabhu. Narottam Maharaj said, no, you move him here. So I moved him. There was no bed. Both of us used to sleep on a floor. And so that's how we are serving Srila Prabhupada. Like I was translating. Tamal Krishna Maharaj was very particular. He always would see that I'm translating at least certain period, for certain period. And besides that, I had, in the morning I used to go to Srila Prabhupada and take his breakfast. But Prabhupada wanted me, one day he told me to get the newspapers, English newspapers. So I used to collect those English newspapers from a nearby news stand. And so Prabhupada wanted me to read out the headlines. I used to read the headlines, and if Prabhupada was interested, then he would ask me to read the passage, the news. So this was one of my service in the morning. I used to serve Prabhupada some breakfast, very simple breakfast Prabhupada used to take. And then we used to be with Prabhupada all the time. One of us used to be with Prabhupada all the time, even at night. Like three of us used to share, and the night duties, sometimes some one or two other devotees were also asked to come and stay, because for 2 hours we used to be there. And those days Mother Palika, one of our god sisters, used to cook for Srila Prabhupada. She used to cook and I used to serve Srila Prabhupada, take the plate to Srila Prabhupada. So one day Palika was sick and another god sister was asked to cook. And Prabhupada told her what to cook, how to cook. But I saw when Prabhupada couldn't eat that, he just took a bite and couldn't eat that. So I asked Prabhupada, that it was, the cooking was not all right, the food was not cooked properly. Prabhupada said, no, she doesn't know how to cook. So I blurted out, Srila Prabhupada, should I cook for you tomorrow? Prabhupada said, yes, you can try. So the next morning Prabhupada called me and he told me how to cook certain preparation. He very, very clearly explained to me how to cook it. He even showed me. He asked me, okay, do you want to hear what Prabhupada asked me to cook and how? Do you know parval? Parval and potato. He asked me to cut the potatoes and parval in a certain way. Like parval, just scrape the top part, the skin part, not the full skin, the outer, probably it's called ectoderm, outer skin, at the back of the knife. The skin remains, only the outer part you just scrape out, and cut them in dices, round dices, about 3/4 inch, and potatoes also cut in the same size. And then he asked me to get turmeric, red chili and mustard oil. We are carrying mustard oil for Prabhupada massage. Bengal, you get very good mustard oil. So from Bengal we are carrying a can of mustard oil. And so Prabhupada asked me to put a lot of turmeric. Then he asked me to put the chili, break them into about 3/4 inch long, take the seeds out and put that there. Quite a lot of chili actually. And then he asked me to get that can of mustard oil. And he asked me to pour mustard oil. So I was pouring, and I poured so much, I was thinking maybe Prabhupada was not seeing how much I poured. So I tilted the tin back, and Prabhupada shouted, "Why did you stop pouring? Keep pouring." So I poured a lot of mustard oil. Then Prabhupada said, "Just cover it up to the top. Just the vegetables will be covered. Put salt and put it on the fire. Just let it cook. Don't stir it, don't do anything. Just let it cook. All the water will dry out and then the white steam will start coming. And then there will be a sound like chut, 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 chut. So that time you take it out. Let it cool down and then you scrape it from the bottom. What actually happens is all the whole lot of turmeric settles at the bottom, and with a lot of oil the thing makes a crust and gets kind of a roasted, and it creates a crust, solid crust at the bottom, and when it cools down then you scrape it from the bottom and some chunks of it remains. Anyway, so I served it to Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada ate. I made some other preparations also along with that. And so after serving Srila Prabhupada, I brought the water for Prabhupada to wash his mouth, and then I took the plates and I was washing the plates. So after taking prasad, Upendra Prabhu came and took Srila Prabhupada to his bed. Prabhupada used to lie down for some time. So after putting Prabhupada on his bed, Upendra came running. He said, "Hey, what did you cook today?" Prabhupada asked me to taste it. He said, "You cooked very well." So, and at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Tamal Krishna Maharaj used to come with the letters and Prabhupada used to give dictations. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj also after that came and he said, "You know, Prabhupada was really praising your cooking. He really liked it." But the next day I blew it. I cooked, Srila Prabhupada took a bite and he said, "You don't have any standard. One day you cook nicely, I praise you, but the next day you are gone." And I was completely devastated. So the next day I was cooking very carefully. I really concerned that if I make a mistake this time, then I lose this opportunity forever. And so I cooked, took the prasad to Srila Prabhupada. When I saw that Prabhupada was eating, I got some confidence. So I asked Prabhupada, "Is the prasad all right today?" Prabhupada said, "Yes, today it was all right." I said, "Prabhupada, I was so much in anxiety. I was so afraid all the time when I was cooking." Prabhupada said, "Yes, when you are serving your spiritual master, you should be in anxiety and you should be afraid." So that's how I got the service of cooking for Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada stayed in Bombay for some time. The other day I told you about the orange juice incident, you remember? So that was, should I repeat it? Okay, I'll just tell it, those who are not here. I was actually, Shyamasundar Prabhu was asking some memorable incident that I remember with Srila Prabhupada, and in course of that I remembered that. One morning Prabhupada wanted me to get some orange juice. So there was no orange in the kitchen, there was no orange in the temple anywhere. So I went to buy the orange from the market. So when I came back, and started to make the orange juice, Prabhupada's bell rang. So I went to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada asked, where's the orange juice? And so I said, Prabhupada, I'm just bringing it. So I just quickly started to make it, and then the bell rang again. This time the bell just kept on ringing and ringing. Like from the sound of the bell I could understand the mood of Srila Prabhupada. So I took that orange juice in a silver cup that Srila Prabhupada used to use, placed it on a silver plate and took it to Srila Prabhupada. As I opened the door and stepped into the room, Prabhupada just saying, I don't want it, take it away, take it away. I couldn't take it away. So with the plate in hand, I just kept on moving towards Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada didn't say anything. I held it in front of him. Prabhupada wouldn't pick it up for quite some time. I just kept on holding it. Then finally Prabhupada picked up the glass, started to drink. Then I realized that I forgot to bring the water for Prabhupada to wash his mouth. So I ran to the kitchen, got a bowl of water. When I gave that water to Srila Prabhupada to wash his mouth, actually I used to hold the bowl and Prabhupada used to take the thing and spit it out. Then I realized that I forgot to bring the napkin. So this time I didn't go to the kitchen, I just went to Srila Prabhupada's wardrobe and pulled out a small towel and wiped Prabhupada's mouth. While I was wiping Prabhupada's mouth, Prabhupada just kept on telling, you try to serve me so nicely, but I am always chastising you. Please don't mind. You see, when somebody becomes old, he becomes short-tempered. When Prabhupada was chastising me, I didn't mind. But when Prabhupada was speaking like that, my heart ached. I couldn't speak. My throat got choked. Finally, I managed to say, Prabhupada, please don't speak like that. I make mistakes, and if you don't correct me, then what will happen to me? How will I ever learn how to serve you? And so this is Srila Prabhupada, like he would chastise, but then he would apologize, oh, as if, please don't mind that I am. When one becomes old, one becomes short-tempered. One day in Bombay, two very important persons came. One was the ex-governor of Madras, and the other was the chairman of Bajaj Industries. So they were brothers-in-law and they were Prabhupada's old acquaintance. They had a lot of respect for Srila Prabhupada. So they came to meet Srila Prabhupada. And when they saw that Prabhupada's health was not so good, so they suggested that Prabhupada went for a change somewhere. They used the expression, go for a change. And they suggested that the Prabhupada went to the foothills of Himalayas in Rishikesh, because it was summertime, so that place would be quite pleasant on the bank of the Ganges. And Prabhupada also admitted that he never went to Rishikesh, so he liked the idea. And so a small group of us traveled to Rishikesh. Tamal Krishna Maharaj, myself, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj's servant at that time was Gauridas Pandit, and Prabhupada, and Upendra Prabhu. So few of us traveled from Bombay to Delhi, and then from Delhi, after overnight stay, we went to Rishikesh. It was a beautiful house on the bank of the Ganges. I think those days that was the most beautiful house in Rishikesh, called Ganga Darshan. And Prabhupada was staying and translating. But one day there was a big storm, and it was really heavy rain and heavy storm, torrents of rain, and the electricity got cut. There was no electric supply. It was dark at night. So Prabhupada was very inconvenienced. And one night went like that. The next night also, the electricity didn't come back. So there at night, I used to be with Srila Prabhupada from 12 to 2 at night. Upendra Prabhu used to be from 10 to 12. I used to be from 12 to 2. Then Pramana Swami, one South American sannyasi, godbrother of ours, he used to come from 2 to 4, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj used to come at 4 o'clock. So, in this way, one of us always used to be with Srila Prabhupada at night. And one night, Prabhupada, that night, the second night without electricity. And that night actually the electricity came back. Yeah, that evening electricity came back. But at about 1 o'clock, Srila Prabhupada called me and he told me, the time has come for me to leave this planet. I want to leave my body in Vrindavan. Please take me to Vrindavan immediately. I mean, that was such a shocking thing to hear. I mean, I practically started to tremble and ran downstairs, woke up Tamal Krishna Maharaj and told him what Prabhupada said. So he also completely shocked, jumped out of his bed and ran upstairs. Prabhupada told him the same thing, the time has come for me to leave this planet. I want to leave my body in Vrindavan. Please take me to Vrindavan immediately. So that night only we packed everything, and next morning we left for Vrindavan. Stopped in Delhi, came to Vrindavan. And when we arrived in Vrindavan, the devotees were ecstatic, like all of a sudden Prabhupada is coming. And those days, you know, like Prabhupada's arrival was the most exciting event. And such an accidental arrival of Srila Prabhupada, all of a sudden the whole temple was vibrant. Like when Prabhupada arrived, I mean, there were just beautiful kirtan. And devotees dancing, they followed Srila Prabhupada to the temple room. Prabhupada had the darshan of the deities, and then Prabhupada went to his room with all the devotees following him. And then Prabhupada was, he sat down in his asana, and then he broke the news. He told why he came to Vrindavan. Like you could literally see how ecstasy can turn into agony. That news just came with such a shocking effect on everyone there. Prabhupada could sense that and he started to speak. He recited that verse, Dehi Nashmin Jatha Dehe. And he explained how dhirastatra namuhyati is the body that goes through different changes, childhood to youth to old age. Tatha dehantara praptir, at one stage one leaves the body, but that's not the end, goes to another body, dehantara praptir. Therefore, those who are situated in knowledge, they do not lament. They do not become bewildered or overwhelmed. In this way, Prabhupada just explained. And then when everyone left, Prabhupada called me. And he said, from now on, you don't cook for me and you don't force me to eat anything. What's the use of eating when there is no appetite? I mean, I could see that Prabhupada is going to leave his body without eating. And just, he came to Vrindavan to give up his body. So I went and told Tamal Krishna Maharaj what Prabhupada said. I remember Tamal Krishna Maharaj also was sitting on the floor in the guest house room where we are staying. And he said, we can't imagine, we can't, at a time like this, we can't really make out what to do. Because that word from Srila Prabhupada came like an ultimatum. Don't force me to eat anything. So we could not actually. So he is going to stop eating. In the meantime, the news reached to different parts of the world. When Tamal Krishna Maharaj was in, when we were in Delhi, Tamal Krishna Maharaj called up Adikeshava Maharaj in New York and asked him to convey this message. Those days the telephone system in India was terrible. Like, we couldn't even make local calls, what to speak of international calls. And so the devotees received that news, and within a few days they all came back to Vrindavan. And they had a meeting. I was not in that meeting, I was with Srila Prabhupada. But in that meeting they decided that Prabhupada, what would happen if they left, if Prabhupada left now? So they can't allow Prabhupada to leave. Prabhupada is a pure devotee. So if Prabhupada wants something, Krishna will fulfill that desire of Srila Prabhupada. And then they came and told Srila Prabhupada. I think it was Tamal Krishna Maharaj who actually spoke. And then Prabhupada said, okay, so if you all want, if you all so want, I will stay. And that was such an exciting thing, like everyone jumped up with joy. Jai Srila Prabhupada. Every day I used to always keep some fruit juice ready after in intervals, just in case Prabhupada wanted to drink something. So after about 3 days or so, Prabhupada told me, give me some fruit juice. No, give me something to drink. So I had this glass of pomegranate juice ready, so I gave it to Srila Prabhupada and Prabhupada drank it. So this is how Prabhupada decided to stay with us. If you so desire, then I will stay. If we so desire, Prabhupada will stay with us. Srila Prabhupada ki jaya. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunnavadi Paschatta Dishutarine. Srila Prabhupada ki jaya. Hare Krishna. So we have a few minutes. Should we invite a few questions if you have? Well, I didn't have much of a family, you see. I lost my mother when I was young. So it was my father, my brother was already in America, my sister was married, so I was the only one. The father was little, well, the way I was behaving, everybody knew that I was gone. But my father was a little concerned that, you know, like he thought that he didn't, he also couldn't take ISKCON so seriously. So he thought my participation or joining ISKCON was not really a serious endeavor to get into a spiritual life. He probably thought that I would rather join some Hindu ashram. So that was the reaction. Otherwise, I didn't get any obstruction from our family. Thank you.